welcome back, everybody. Of course, I'd like to have you guys check us out on Facebook. And where else?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
Perfect. Lots of fun stuff. Interactive map. We always talk about the interactive map. It is pretty doggone cool. Go to the area you want to go to. Click on it. It'll take you to the DNR website. And any activities that you want, you'll have all the dates and what's going on, anything special happening as well. So pretty neat little contraption, as they say. So, alluded to it prior to the break. You and I talked about it a little bit over the break. Out of Pennsylvania, I think it's, how do you start a story like this? It's just sad. State Game Land, they have a special alert that was sent out by the Pennsylvania Game Commission. Special alert to dog owners and hikers. This happens to be in a state game land area. And the Game Commission is asking those finding dog treats with fish hooks in them to contact the agency. Disturbing incident involving dog treats embedded with fish hooks in the state game land in Lehigh County remains under investigation after nearly a month after they've been discovered. At least a dozen booby trap treats were found by hikers on May 5th in the Appalachian Trail and state land set 217. They were scattered in a popular spot between two different roads and shelter areas and not far from the Lehigh Gap Nature Center. And hiker contacted the Nature Center, which in turn notified the Game Commission, and wardens were dispatched. The commission posted an advisory with photos of the of these doggy treats laden with fish hooks. The outreach was a heads up to the visitors and made a hope in generating leads to the perpetrators and see if they can't find out who did it. Within days of that post, they generated a reach of over 2 million people, which is awesome. And they were fielding media calls from across the country. Struck a chord with many people. It was shared, shared, and shared. And there were hundreds of comments. People were outraged. The Nature Center was also posted an advisory on its Facebook page urging hunters to be vigilant and hikers as well. Let's see. There's no reports of wildlife perishing. While the commission had received a few tips, said they're still seeking more information. Granted, they're accustomed to dealing with all types of items from drug paraphernalia to discarded tires and graffiti, but dog treats rigged to do harm is a first. Nobody had ever experienced that and seen that. Depending on what the investigation reveals, he added, it could result in multiple charges relating to both game code and state crime code violations. It was a deliberate and disturbing act. Stoner said the tainted treats were half a mile or more from where anyone could get to a vehicle, so they'd have to be carried in. They were clearly visible on the trail and looked like they hadn't been there for long. So what kind of a crappy human being do you have to be to do that?
I am not sure. Honestly, when I see things like this, I typically think of teenagers that don't really understand consequences of their actions.
You know,
do you know what I'm saying? Like, they think it's funny.
I do.
And it's really not funny.
I do. But
at all?
The number of them and the way that they were placed in it wasn't a random act of let's not think this through. It was put on state hunting game land where you would normally hunt. People take their dogs out. So it was intended to reach a certain, what do you call it, not demographic, but certain use, how people would use the territory, use that particular land. And I think in today's age of polarizing, I think it's attitudes possibly, and I think people are becoming less callous to things that have that kind of impact. I mean, if it's out of sight, it's out of mind. I'm going to stop somebody from hunting. They'll find these things out there, or stop anybody from using this land and for, you know, practicing with their retriever or whatever. Well, that certainly is going to have impact. And it's sad to say, but to me, it's almost like a terrorist act.
Yeah.
It really is. It's meant to cause that. It's meant
right.
to cause fear.
Harm.
Fear and harm, because your dog is part of your family.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone thinks a dog is not, they need to have their head examined. And to have somebody go and do this, you could seriously, if somebody found out who it was and they didn't take kindly to it, there could be, who knows what would happen if somebody wants to cause harm to part of their family. So as you would, hey, don't mess with my, you know, any part of my family, whether it's my dogs, my kids, or my husband or wife, that's the same thing has holds true here. So I find it very, I think the word is disturbing. Why somebody would actually think that that's, well, I guess it comes back to the same thing. There is no think, there is intent.
Right.
There is an intent, and it's not, you know, there's somebody had intention to do something, thank goodness there were no dogs or animals hurt, because that could have been bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the dog treats, it looks like, what do you call those? It looks like a hot dog. And
oh, it's like
a casing,
yeah.
You know, like what do you you buy them in a package? They're filled with pizza, or they're filled with, you know, that humans we can,
yes,
buy, but pizza rolls, or you know, the little tiny ones that have the pretzel on the outside and filled with whatever, but
filling on the inside.
Yeah, but that's what it looks like, with hooks in the middle of it as well as sticking out of the outer. So pretty bad stuff. And of course, if that was embedded into some animal, treble hook's going to go in. It's not coming out. You ever get a treble hook in your hand before?
No.
Yeah. Multiple times. And it's not, it just doesn't come out.
Nope.
Not good. Anyway, so let's move on to a positive.
Could we? Because the last two stories
were downers. Well,
downers.
They're downers.
Man.
I know. I like to lead with down and then we can finish on an up.
Okay.
Everything's up from here.
All right. The final 10 minutes, guys. Here we go.
We're going to pull this one out. We're going to do this. out of Minnesota, the Minnesota turkey hunters have shattered the previous record to harvest as the spring season concludes. The spring turkey season ended May 31st. Record-breaking years in the books. Total harvest reached 16,660 turkeys. And that is impressive because it surpasses the 2020 record of 13,996.
Wow.
That's 2,600 more birds.
And Don Cleaver contributed.
He got one of those.
He
which
did.
One, I'm not sure, but he got one of those. Well, a few birds might still be reported. Most of the harvest is officially wrapped up. And it was a great season. The the analysis was, it was highest all time by a lot. And 2020 was a record. And of course, 2020, you know why? It's partly because it was a record. It was with COVID and everybody was able to go out. Now we don't have COVID and we had significantly more birds that were harvested. The spring turkey hunting interest was strong. Licenses exceeded 60,000 licenses. That's the second highest number, with 2020 being the highest at 63,000 licenses. So it looks to be that there were more birds, which is a good thing, and success increased. The average rate is between 21% and 23%, and the 2024 season is 28% of harvest success rate. And it's kind of cool. They've got a graph, Ava. You can see the graphical representation of the years. And yeah, it's significant. Last year was 13.6. 12, 12, 10, 10, 11, 12, back to 2015 is 11, 6. So pretty significant increase in harvest, and back-to-back good years of nesting, which is a bonus. And, of course, last the 2023-24 season was mild, so that definitely helped the young of the year birds survive. So 2024 nesting year is still uncertain, which with the hatching happening right now, believes the 2024 rain came at a good time, lost for more insects and food to be there for the poults. Did you know that's a young turkey is a poult?
A poult.
A
it's
poult.
So great.
Yep. What do you do? In the Olympics, I went poult vaulting. That's jumping over turkeys, but that's a different story. I think we're in good shape right now, he said. You know, it's one of those things where it's super hard, especially with turkeys, to predict. But they are a hardy bird, and any of the upland birds with the young, lots of rain is really not necessarily a great thing, but beyond that, they'll be fine. And they're just going to get wet because the temperatures are not super cold. So yeah, pretty cool. One other item to note, two of the biggest talking points heading into the 2024 spring turkey season. It's centered on crossbows and youth hunting. The crossbows were legal for use by any age for the first time this spring, and the DNR did receive some complaints. Some hunters thought it was unfair the crossbow hunters were able to hunt every season, while firearms could only hunt in a one-week season and a final two-week closing season. Regardless, 7% of the total harvest came from crossbow users. He said it's interesting to see the number increases or stays relatively the same in the 2025 and future years. So it'll be kind of a, how does it play out with crossbow? Is it going to go up? And once people figure out, it's kind of a, some people think it's a fun way to shoot. I think some of the people have tried it and they don't think it's as fun as a bow or as a shotgun. So I don't know. I've never shot a crossbow. You?
I feel like I have because my dad has one, so I'm sure I have. But
we'll just go with that. The DNR has also been advocating for more opportunities, and they continue to work this spring to get more youth hunters out spring turkey, and the results show is effective. He said about 3,200 turkey were harvested by youth this year. That's an increase from 2,500. So that's a big jump, which is good. And, you know, and that's the biggest issue right now. We don't have a lot of kids getting back or parents getting kids into the hunting side. There, a lot of it's going the other way. And I think a lot of it had to do with the opportunities that have been presented. So I think it's a kind of a, what would you call it? Return on investment, which is really cool. You know, we talked earlier this year when the current administration had rescinded funding for kids. That was archery in schools. That was for hunter education. It was for trap, anything to do with any firearm at all. It was completely eliminated. And, of course, when uproar happened, they went, oops, we got caught. Now we have to go back and under a presidential signature, they finally were able to get the funding back. But, you know, it's always one of those things where you have to be diligent, write your congressmen and representatives to make sure they know that your particular belief is that...
Hey, what's important to you?
What is important and what's not important? So you've gone fishing or going to a camp where you have somebody that seems to be always in the know with the latest and greatest and everything, right?
They're kind of
the
guru, for sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So for those of you that have that person that they're at the, you're at the cabin, you're heading to the cabin, you're heading out wherever you're going to head out to the to a gathering of outdoor people. There's always that one person that always seems to know more than everyone.
Mm-hmm.
How's that saying go from the movie? Who's the smartest one in the room? And they let you know. So I'm going to give you guys some, I guess, words with the definition of the words so you can use them appropriately in a sentence similar to a spelling bee so that you can figure out exactly how to baffle them and suddenly make them step back.
It's kind of like teen lingo.
Yeah. We're giving you some lingo. one of them is going to be involving crankbaits. People often wonder, why are crankbait colors dark on the top and light on the bottom? Well, it is called countershading.
Countershading.
Okay. It's a unique color pattern, universally seen in fish, dark on the top, light on the bottom. So predators looking down see dark against the dark background. And when predators look up, they see light against a light background, which is really kind of fun. So what else do you want to know? Let me see. We're going to pull up how about fike nets? Fike net. Fike net is a fish trap set in shallow water with stakes or anchors. They're nets that are easy for fish to enter and hard to exit. Most Midwestern fisheries agencies and private aquaculture businesses use some form of a fike net, often referred to as a trap net.
Why is it called a fike net?
Because it's called a fike net. Don't argue with me.
Okay.
Don't act for a definition of the word. They just made the word up.
All right.
It's like, I
feel
know.
Like I'm in school.
Yeah, you are.
Don't ask any questions. Don't ask.
Yep, exactly.
How about the next word?
Juvenile. That's what it's.
Oh.
Juvenile describes any fish before it reaches maturity.
Well, okay.
Yep. One of them that was. There we go. Okay, so this has to do with a military word as well, having to do with the U.S. Navy. So it's oftentimes there's the word used literal, or in this case, it's called littoral.
Littoral
is a limnological term meaning shallow water area along the shoreline. So those ships are designed to have a shallow draft and they can run closer to shore, and they're designed for that. They have jet drives. It's defined by the Minnesota DNR for simply and consistency's sake, water under 15 feet of depth. The antonym to littoral would be profundal zone or deep zone of an inland lake. Where are you fishing? I'm fishing the profundal zone. And it's a great way that you don't have to tell anybody where you're fishing. How about you? Oh, I'm fishing the littoral zone. What does that mean? Figure it out.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, well, I'm fishing the shallow break line.
If you knew,
use your words, would you please? Yep. So let's see. What else?
All right. You got about a minute.
I got a minute. Pirate perch.
Oh, no.
Pirate perch, one of the most unique fish species and deadly play for the letter P in the game's categories. The fish, the fish's butt is found in its mouth.
What?
I'm not joking. Seriously. Yeah, it's a unique, it is a fish species. No, I'm not joking.
Hmm.
You think I would quit? I would quote something like that if it wasn't true?
Yes.
And last but not least,
okay,
we're going to call it a red, R-E-D-D. It's a spawning bed of a trout or salmon in a river. The etymology of red originates as a Scottish word that means to clean an area or make it tidy, which is what trout and salmon will do with their tails to a spot in a stream or ripple before spawning.
That's a good one, Aaron.
Red, R-E-D-D. There you go. You have all that you need to have munition against that know-it-all in fish camp. Make it happen. Make it so. And we have done that for you here at the Valley Outdoors. For Abe and myself, we are out of here. Have a great weekend, everybody.